This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On today's program, we're going to focus on a couple topics of interest in East Chicago. We'll have Milton Reed with the Mayor Anthony Copeland's office talking along with Marino Solario, who's the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of East Chicago, about some interesting topics, some major projects that are underway right now, a lot of projects happening in that particular city. And then a little later, we'll talk with Pastor Willie Johnson, who's with the Mission of Jesus Christ Church in East Chicago, about, of all things, a garden, a big garden. Seen a lot of construction crews around the city of East Chicago these days. There is a lot of construction that is underway, and we're going to have two gentlemen talk more about that in detail here, especially when it comes to what's happening in East Chicago these days. With us in studio is Milton Reed, who is an economic development consultant to Mayor Anthony Copeland, and also Marino Solario, who is also the city's Director of Planning and Economic Development, two fellows who work closely with the city administration on all of these projects. Thank you both for being with us here on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having us.
A lot of things to cover, and we'll just kind of get things started on the list here. One of the things I know, that, and it's been a long-going project, it seems, for some people, they always see something happening in downtown East Chicago, and it's been worked on. There's been work that's been on streets and neighborhoods and downtown business districts for some time, off and on. And tell us the latest here about the revitalization plan for the city downtown.
Well, yes, shortly after Mayor Anthony Copeland became mayor, we hired a strategist called Hyatt Palmer, and they do Indiana downtowns, and they give consulting advice on how do you really breathe the wind into and revitalize the downtown. We had community meetings, groups talk with businesses, and at the end of all of it, the mayor was able to allocate and free up quite a bit of money for the revitalization. Mm-hmm. So you will see new retail buildings at Main and Broadway. You'll see new streets, sidewalks, lighting. We recently completed about July 3rd a gateway monument, a placemaking design to say, hey, this is the entry into our downtown. So when you're entering the city off of Columbus Drive, you have a gateway that takes you to your shopping, eating, dining experience. And so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Milton, that's got to be the most impressive part, is just seeing that sign down there, because that's something new and something that I'm sure even East Chicago residents hadn't expected to see.
Yeah, I agree. And I think people, when they start seeing things like that come up, they start believing. You know, one thing about our city is we have two downtowns. One is in the harbor, and mm-hmm. one is what we call the East Chicago downtown. And what that study suggested was that if we focus our attention into the harbor downtown, then we can replicate the same thing in the other and in other areas in the city. And so the gateway sign is a portion of that revitalization effort, along with the mayor's been very aggressive with the facade program that kicks in, in particular in the harbor. Depending on what streets you're in, there's an 80-20 match, meaning the 80 will pay 80% of your facade improvement and the business owner will pay 20%, and it's a cap of $25,000. So it's very, with the streetscaping, the new sidewalks, this gateway sign really just kind of puts that cherry on the top of the sundae.
Did you all discover during the studies that we found that people not only come in from the north, as you say, come in through the harbor area, but they come up Indianapolis Boulevard into East Chicago, correct, from the south, basically from Hammond.
Yes.
And a lot of people, then you hang a left or a right, mostly right, to go into the main business district.
Correct, and that's the out of the downtown that we're talking about. And mm-hmm. We actually just finished our TOD plan for the area that you're talking about, coming from, well, they come from north and south, but where our South Shore train station, that is going to, we believe that is a strategic location for development. And so we're aggressively looking to finalize and fine-tune this plan to develop that area, along with strategizing how it connects to that downtown in East Chicago. Mm-hmm.
For people that aren't familiar with that particular area, they're around the train station, they're on Indianapolis Boulevard, is the train station, of course. And there are other businesses, some industries or industrial zone buildings that are nearby. And then you get very close to a very, very well-established but very old residential district. In fact, it's there by the park. There's a park nearby there, too, that the people in East Chicago take advantage of. So it would be a great opportunity for redevelopment, wouldn't it?
It is. Very, very, very stable neighborhood in East Chicago. manicured lawns and anything you see in any other community. So mm-hmm. we're very proud of that neighborhood, just a good group of people living there. And again, as you look even regionally, as through the state and the regional focus of, you know, developing our existing assets around transportation, and that is our key hub. We've had a few folks come in from some universities and give us some talks, and we've had charrettes, and we've been in the community, and you know, Mayor Copeland is very big about involving people in these decisions. So, you know, we always get community input on what we do. And so I think that's going to be like, what's next? We're staged and ready to go, getting shovel ready for a lot of those projects in that area. But another benefit I want to point out is adjacent is Lost Marsh. Not Lost Marsh.
Roxana Marsh.
Roxana Marsh.
Oh, yeah. Very much.
Roxana Marsh, yes. So, and again, just a very area that was not able to really be enjoyed by the residents, but now it's been a cleanup there. And so we're going to use that and start our development of our bike trails and our bird watching and whatever
it is. Boat launch area, kayak and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roxana Marsh has been one, unfortunately, of many areas in East Chicago that have been overdeveloped, or worse that, they've been basically industrial dumping grounds. And we know that the Army Corps of Engineers has worked very hard with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management to clean up Roxana Marsh, mm-hmm. and that's been one of the great success stories, I think, in getting that area cleaned up and back to the point where people will enjoy it just as much as they do the entryways to get over to other lakes along Lake Michigan.
It's correct. It's a hidden gem, and mm-hmm. it's coming together. People are starting to realize and see. And one of the big things that we see in East Chicago is that when people come back, whether to visit or on holidays, and they just drive through the town, they are just saying unsolicited, like, wow, we really see the city and Mayor Copeland doing things that we can visibly see where the money is going and how the projects are improving. Just unsolicited, just everyone just saying, hey, we see a difference now.
Yep.
You mentioned at the start of the conversation not only about the I guess more established of the downtown East Chicago's there on along Indianapolis Boulevard to the east and west of the road, but also you talk about the Harbor area. Harbor Walk is another big area that has been under development. Tell us how that's coming along and what people will see when it's finally all done.
Well, ironically, Harbor Walk, which is about a $3 million project out at our lakefront and marina area, mm-hmm. and this call a $3 million project, a small part of a larger lakefront development. If you look at overall the investment that is going into the lakefront, the marina, and the encircling Harbor Walk, you're probably well over $12 million when you put them all together. And this project is, the mayor had a vision to reopen the marina and the beach back to the residents. The marina has somewhat been used exclusively by boaters. Not that anyone wasn't allowed, but that's just what the general perception was. And so we reduced the footprint of the docks with a new dock project, by the way, that is close to $5 million in the same footprint. But we also wanted to beautify for families to come out and enjoy our water, enjoy our lakes. There'll be enhancements, new railing, new lighting, safety features. We're also going to bring in kayaking and you know, things that you can do on the actual water, because it's a beautiful place. Enhancements to our restaurant and bar area. So that project is underway right now.
Yeah, and the idea is that we're making the lakefront, you know, in a lot of industrialized communities, lakes and rivers and things like that have always been the backdrop mm-hmm. to the communities. We're trying to make it the forefront. And so making the lakefront investment is going to be critical to even revitalizing the downtown and the harbor and making those connections so that people can actually walk to these things. You know, we have Klein Avenue that cuts, really dissects the lakefront from the harbor. And so eventually, now that we're investing all this money, we will create that connection for the residents to be able to get to the lakefront and finally enjoy it.
That's Marino Solario, who is the East Chicago Director of Planning and Economic Development, and with this as well as Milton Reed, who's a consultant to Mayor Anthony Copeland on economic development. We've talked about the great developments here, and there are more to talk about here before we finish up, but let's talk about the new businesses that are coming into the city. There are always new ones that come in on an occasional basis. We know that the Northwest Indiana Economic Development Organizations do their part to help attract new businesses to East Chicago, and there have been a lot of areas in East Chicago that were maybe underdeveloped have really grown. Tell us about some of the new businesses that have come in town.
Well, I think, you know, we had great success with hoist lift truck coming into the city, and I think that's kind of re-energized a lot of the industrial core mm-hmm. Of the city. Mm-hmm. I think for a very long time, maybe the city just kind of has been fighting this like industrial stigma. But I think with them coming in, it kind of we're embracing it because we do see that there's a lot of benefits to moving into East Chicago, the operations into East Chicago, including not just industrial, but even commercial. There are a lot of vacant industrial properties that are now being looked at for redevelopment, including Suppliers Park off of Railroad Avenue, and there's another 4400 Homerly Avenue. So these vacant parcels now are being looked at for full redevelopment in terms of industrial. The city's efforts, though, have been to try to get people into the downtowns, specifically the harbor, and we've been focusing on really kind of your mom and pops. There has been, for example, there's a successful restaurant that just opened up, R&R Caribbean Jerk, mm-hmm. on the Main Street corridor, and they've outgrown their space already, and they've been open for a month.
Really?
So we're hoping to move them into the further into the downtown off of Broadway, where the old Frank Mervan Township office was. And again, this goes back to just believing in really what is a natural way of building a business. I think there's a lot of residents in the city that want to do something. You know, I've in my office, at least, a lot of people come in. You know, I got a place that wants to do a fun center, you know. And so some of these old buildings that are in the downtown, instead of demoing them, could be repurposed because they don't make buildings like that anymore. And so, you know, we've taken – the city has been very aggressive at strategically taking properties and buying these properties and focusing – the type of development we want in that downtown. So really, I think that's been a strategy along with the further investments, the millions of dollars that have been gone into that downtown.
And from an economic development strategy, you know, you want to have the big deals and you want to have the small ones too, mm-hmm. because the people that can still walk to some businesses, and I will say, if you love jerk chicken, you've got to make your way to Main Street in East Chicago. You almost cannot get into the place. The food is just that great. Yeah.
Well, that's just amazing to hear a business that usually we hear stories of small businesses struggling, mm-hmm. and here we have one that is just exploding. They have outgrown their space already.
Look right within our footprint of Main and Broadway, the eating selections, authentic Mexican food right on Broadway. You have, if you like your traditional, like fried shrimp, fried chicken, and fish, you have that on
Great
Broadway.
Great breakfast place, DBA's.
Breakfast place right there on Broadway. So you have multiple eating options right here, and it's all thriving. I mean, you go in there, and it's hustling, it's bustling, the food is good, the food is hot, and I tend to be a finicky eater, and I'll tell you, you know, I would let it be known, but come down there, and also want to point out, where you can come and get your food, and within the area is a beautiful Unity Plaza. One thing that the city has lacked in a little bit in growth is artwork and just placemaking experience. Wonderful social space right in the 3900 block mm-hmm. of Main Street with free Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So you come out there, you go to DBA's, get your sandwich, get your lunch, go right over there, sit out, pull out your tablet, and get online. It's beautiful. There's artwork, Corten Steel, artwork with things from East Chicago, perfectly landscaped. You cannot have a better eating experience than what you have right
there. I like
there.
That Milton brought up Wi-Fi because in most of our parks, in our lakefront, in our downtowns, we have put in Wi-Fi for the residents, free for the residents to be able to enjoy. That's part of a strategy, a part of our Fiber Loop project, actually, that we just completed in the city. And so the city is well connected for the 21st century and on beyond. And so I think that's going to be critical for bringing new businesses and even residents to move to the city. So
a couple of the other projects that we wanted to be sure to mention in Chicago are the work that's ongoing and coming up as well on community centers. And let's also talk about the park improvement project, too. We have these the well-established historic parks like Kosciuszko Park on Indianapolis Boulevard. People see those parks all the time, but they don't always realize that all the parks in the city of East Chicago undergo a little metamorphosis from time to time.
Absolutely.
Correct. And I think one of the issues when we first started that project was that the people that should be using the parks weren't using them. Mm-hmm. And we asked ourselves why, you know, and the question we asked ourselves is how do we get families back into these parks? And the answer was really simple, is offer the amenities for them to be able to do. And so we strategized and figured out, I mean, this started as a $300,000 project to now what will be ultimately probably $77 million project. And we've taken in these past 4 years all the way from our – we started with our big parks and went into our neighborhood parks and pocket parks. We're hoping that by this year we're done with all our parks and then we'll move on to Block Stadium. But very early on we thought that that was a big quality of life issue that we needed to tackle. Mm-hmm. And so we got all new playground equipments. The three major parks have fitness equipments outdoor so that you're able to and they're actually placed right next to playground equipment so that – if you're an adult and you're bringing your kid, there's no excuse for you. Now you could actually – they're all orientated facing the playground equipment on purpose so that you can still do your workout and still check out your kid right next door playing on the playground. So that, you know, volleyball courts, new volleyball courts. We rehabbed some tennis courts, basketball courts, and we put trails. That was another key into our park system. Washington Park never had a trail and was one of the major parks in the city. And we've revitalized all those. We even painted them so that people knew this is the trail. And we're adding more trails into the rest of the park. It is the vision eventually to connect our park system through a citywide trail system outside of a not just recreation component, but we want to start focusing on bikes as a transportation component so that people don't have to necessarily get in a car to get around in East Chicago because there's a lot of bikers, but bikers don't like biking in unsafe places and unsafe conditions. So we're strategizing that along with our park system.
Right, which is another thing you'll see in early 2018 is Columbus Drive. We're putting a trail along Columbus Drive that's going to turn into Klein Avenue Service Road. So you're going to see Columbus Drive totally revamped and redone. The architectural plans are engineering plans are being done right now. So
a new pedestrian bridge that's going to cross over for safety reasons. The kids that go from one side of town to the other, south, what I would call the North Harbor, what we call the North Harbor now, and the South Harbor. So those are key elements. Connectivity is going to be a key element now when we try to, you know, there's a lot going on in Chicago, and so we have to make those connections.
You were talking earlier about the projects that we wanted to bring up, the community centers, and there are two. As you say, there's one that's underway of improvements right now. There's another that is yet to come on the scene for another set of improvements. Tell us how those are coming along.
Correct. I think we looked at what we were lacking in the community centers, and it seemed like there wasn't a very holistic approach to that. And so the new centers will offer multiple recreation opportunities along with social economic type of activities. But mainly there will be an indoor track, volleyball, tennis, basketball, and spaces that you can kind of retrofit. Community rooms. And that's not what we had in our previous community center. So right now we're starting with two. One is at Veterans Park, which was called Heritage Hall. That's being done right now. And we're out to bid on the other one, so that should be coming in. Actually, we received the bids already.
Yes.
So hopefully in a month we'll start construction on that one. That will be replacing Pennsylvania Community Center off the Guthrie Corridor. And then we are also focusing on Block Stadium, and we're building a somewhat community center complex and tying in what is Block Stadium in that area, right. Washington Park. And I think the total investment is around $12 to $15 million for that.
Right. So the community centers that we have were just at the end of their useful life.
Right.
And they need a lot of repairs and things like that. And so we looked at, again, strategically, what does our population ask for? What does this next generation want to do, whether it be fitness or, you know, walking? You know, many more people are getting into health and fitness, but you want to do it all year round. Mm-hmm. So now when you can't do it outside,
parks,
you can still have basketball going and still have a track available for people that would like to do that type of activity. So it's going to be really, really nice and really exciting.
We've talked a lot here about construction projects and other projects to make big improvements to the city of East Chicago, but we can't forget about the events that happen, and there are a lot of events that are even coming up very soon here. Tell us about, if I'm pronouncing this right, Fusik Fest, which is coming up here the 1st of August.
Yes, it is.
Well, Fusik Fest was kind of a brainchild of the committee here, the Special Events Committee, but it's really just Fusik. It's a fusion of fun, food, and music. And that's it's kind of a it's a rebranding of the taste of East Chicago, but so much more. We're bringing acrobats, acrobatic shows from the Cincinnati Circus, a fire show, a water show. Aquafly is going to be doing, you know, some somersaults and things like that in the water with neon lights, and we're adding fireworks to every night.
And residents and, can't beat the price, right?
Correct. The price is free. So, and anyone, actually, it's free for anyone. And Sheila E. will be coming, doing a Prince tribute on August 5th. And so the fest is August 4th, 5th, and 6th. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and Sheila E. will be performing on Saturday. So we have tributes. We have Selena tribute. We have a rock and roll tribute, blues and jazz tribute. So there's just a lot going on, and we hope that people are going to really be receptive of this new event.
The food vendors will be there.
Food vendors will be there, so you'll get all the East Chicago, what's it called, cuisine represented there. And there's going to be on Sunday, or on Saturday, actually, cultural dances. So there's going to be a mm-hmm. Hispanic cultural dance, African dance, and a polka dance. Just kind of be, you know, it's interprets a great kind of weekend. Like the culture of the city. So it's going to be great. Correct.
Something for everyone. Something for everyone. You can't beat the price. And again, you know, with the mayor, the way he manages the money overall, mm-hmm. I think it's just a wonderful opportunity to provide this level of entertainment and this level of festival and say, hey, just come on out and enjoy yourself.
One of the things I did want to ask as well, too, before we finish up our time talking today is the Summer Youth Program that's underway. It's an opportunity for East Chicago youth to get involved in the community and actually get some jobs if some are available, especially for them. How has the program been set up and how is it going so far?
Well, this year we were able to hire everyone that applied. You have to be an East Chicago resident. And so this is really, you know, I was part of that program, and so it helped me build some money so that I can go to college, and I'm thankful for that. And I think many people see it as a kind of a starting point in their work in the workforce. That's the way I looked at it. And so they work on various projects in the city, which are critical, especially in the summer is our busiest time with our public works. Our public works is in charge of the whole city in terms of cleaning the parks, cleaning streets, making sure things
the
are,
beach,
you know. Yeah, so all of that. And so they're an integral part of that. And so this year, again, we were able to hire, I think it was like 89, if not 100, residents. They were able to apply, and they were all hired, and I think they finish the beginning of August or mid-August. They're done, and so it's a full summer program. It's been a very successful program every year that they've done it.
And I think, again, the biggest thing to point out is it's been almost every year from what I recall is that everyone that applies – everyone that applies has been accepted into the program. So you can't say I couldn't find anything if you're a resident of East Chicago.
We only have about a minute left here. Milton, we were talking before we went on the program today about how all these projects have gotten started and a lot of things with a lot of many, many different contractors working on many different projects. But a lot of this would not have been able to take place at this particular time, if it weren't for the fact that city government has worked very hard to organize its finances. Tell mm-hmm. us what Mayor Copeland has been trying to do in that respect.
Well, just being a good financial steward of the money, making tough decisions, even tough political decisions, quite honestly, that may not have been popular, but certainly in the best interest of the residents at large. We have an environment where it's not business as usual, and we have put all of the contractors on alert that, hey, you know, we expect to get a good bang for our buck, and when we pay professionals and engineers, you know, we want top-quality service, very demanding environment, but certainly very rewarding environment. And I think when you make those decisions, when you trend back some of the workforce that may have been obsolete, or you do more with less and you manage your money that you have coming in, I think that's the way he's been able to strategically put mm-hmm. those pieces in place. And I will also want to give credit to the RDA, who we received a grant in 2014, and they have been a big help and supporter of our projects that fall in line with the grant. So all of that coming together, city money, RDA money, grant money, and things like that, it's really been you don't see any fleecing of the mm-hmm. residents going on.
And it's no doubt that a balanced budget provides the opportunity to use the money that we can leverage from the casino on different grants and things like that mm-hmm. and use it for actual capital improvement projects and infrastructure that has been kind of at its peak you know, was great, but now it needs to be fixed.
And there were times when we didn't have the match. Now we have a grant, but you didn't have the match. Now we have the match, and we can leverage those dollars to do more for the city.
Correct. Well, gentlemen, we'll have to get back in to give us an update here sometime here as we get through the summer months into the fall. Yes. We've been hearing more from the city of East Chicago, from Milton Reed. He's the economic development consultant to Mayor Anthony Copeland, and from Marino Solario, who is the director of planning and economic development in East Chicago. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate finding out everything, and we hope, as I say, to have you back again soon. Reverend Willie Johnson is the pastor of the Mission of Jesus Christ Church on Kennedy Avenue in East Chicago, and he's had a number of projects in the years to come up with ways to help the young people in his community and, of course, members of his church to get through a pretty tough time. In a pretty tough city to get through with all the problems that East Chicago has, he's been able to offer some very positive notes, and we'd like to talk about a few of them today. Pastor Johnson, thank you very much for being with us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
If you will, tell us first here about some of the programs that have that lead up to the big project now that anybody that drives by on Kennedy Avenue could see a huge, huge house lot that has been turned into a gigantic garden. This obviously is a program that is helping young people today, but what other programs the church has started up in the past that have kind of led up to this one now?
Well, we had a program called Alternative. And that is give kids an alternative to make better choices. And what we've done is we started having it in our old church, which had a gymnasium in it. And we basically got them in to play games in the gymnasium, which is basketball, volleyball, kickball. And it grabbed a lot of attention of the kids because a lot of them like to have something to do during the summer. So we come up with this program, and myself, Eric Watkins, at the time, started it off. And it started from there.
Now, I guess that this has helped out a number of young people, I guess, up to this point. Do you have any idea of how many young people in East Chicago that have been helped by this particular program?
Oh, we've had, I could say hundreds, because when we first started in it with the gymnasium, we had as many as 50 kids a day that came by, and we ran pretty much through the whole summer. So you can say we have over hundreds of kids that have been part of this program at some point in some time.
And now we take this alternative youth program up to today, or I guess not long ago. Tell us how the big garden got started, where it's located, and all the work that was started, I guess, to get this turned into the garden that is full of vegetables growing right now.
Yes, the garden started when we purchased the church that we're in now. It came with a couple extra lots that the other church had purchased to do some things on. But however, they did, moved, so it left us an empty lot. And while the lot was there, I came up with an idea about starting a garden. We had Brother Eric Dahl, which is was telling me about some of the places that he lived in and some of the things he had did. And some of them consist of having a garden. So I asked him about starting a garden and so that it could be available for the neighborhood. We have a neighborhood that is a little downtrodden somewhat, not real bad, but and then it's got a lot of adults in it, elder people. So we figured, hey, we can grow a garden and we can give the vegetables that we grow in the garden away. And when I said that, he said, well, we also have a food pantry. Why not give some of the vegetables to the, you know, for the food pantry with people that come from all over the city or wherever they might be located to get food? So that's where it started. So we started growing. He grew potatoes. We have tomatoes. We have green beans. We have collard greens. Right now we are growing corn. So that's where it all started at.
That's great. I take it that Brother Dahl was your agricultural expert. He must have worked on a garden at this other facility that he'd been involved with.
Yes, he lived in a few places. He actually teached school on an Indian reservation back in Wisconsin back in the day. So that's where he got some of his agricultural skills from, which is pretty good to grow gardens of that magnitude in the inner city. And it's actually coming out pretty good.
That's great. Now, of course, we have young people involved in this. They're now become urban farmers, I guess, in a way. What kind of education have they picked up along the way? And are they, maybe I should even say, they're picking up just about every day that the garden grows out there?
Absolutely. They're watching the garden grow. They started by even learning how to start planting a garden. And the very first year that he did the garden, he had the young men to come out, and they actually turned the soil over with shovels. Mm-hmm. They was actually out digging, flipping the soil over. So they learned how to even start the garden and flipping the soil over, cleaning it out, the dead grass and stuff. And then he taught them how to plant. And what really gave them satisfaction was to not only teach them how to plant, but to watch it when it was growing and then to maintain it as it was growing. So they the group started with a couple young men, which now is about 6 or 7, maybe 8 to 10 of them at a time that be involved in this garden process.
We're talking with Pastor Willie Johnson with the Mission of Jesus Christ Church on Kennedy Avenue in East Chicago. What we're talking about right now is one of the latest big projects for the church. It's a garden. In fact, it's planted on property of the church that used to be where a house was located, but now it's, I guess, the scene of hundreds of plants, and a lot of them coming up and a lot of plants are growing. And you mentioned, Pastor Johnson, about the fact that the growing season is going to continue on, and that's going to probably provide a lot of great vegetables for not only the folks in the church, but also, as you say, a food pantry. Tell us how this all fits in with what the food pantry is getting.
Well, the food pantry, we have a food pantry that we get food directly from the food banks of East Chicago. That is located in Gary. Mm-hmm. So we have a food pantry that is of Northwest Indiana, actually.
Right.
And we go there and get food from there when they have some available, which is pretty much often. We have a food pantry that is open every Wednesday from 12 to 3 o'clock. So it just adds to some of the stuff they can get. Most of the time it's a variety of food, which changes sometimes from fruit to vegetables to bread, sometimes even meat, sometimes milk. So therefore, with the garden now, we can offer the stuff that comes out of the garden.
Wow. Now, with all these tomatoes coming up and green beans and collard greens and sweet corn that's growing, are you thinking that maybe you'll have an opportunity that you'll have so much you'll be able to offer to the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana that some other food bank is going to be able to take advantage of this?
Oh, absolutely. It's open to whoever will and come to get it. Mm-hmm. It's free. We have even potatoes that we have in the ground and will be coming up pretty soon. The green beans is already sprouting and some have been picked. The tomatoes right now is green. I watched a couple turning red as we speak today. The corn is coming up. He called me this morning and made me aware that he got the sprouts coming out, so corn will be coming up soon.
Well, great.
Sweet corn. So, yeah, we will be able to offer it to whoever it is. And we have over 100 stalks of corn that is coming up at this time.
Wow.
So, yes, we have hundreds of tomatoes. So, sure, we'll be able to offer to whoever would like to come. And it'll be there until it's all gone.
You talk about the advantage that the garden has to not only train young people in how to be farmers, give them something a skill they can certainly take home with them literally and grow either at home, or they can maybe turn that into some kind of a career, I suppose, for some. And this probably has to make young people that are members of the church and even the neighborhood around you there in East Chicago feel good. It's something positive for the city of East Chicago, which unfortunately is kind of found positives at a loss right now and kind of negative right now.
Oh yeah, since the lead crisis, it's been nothing but a lot of negative feed coming out of that community. But there's a lot of stuff that's going on that is in East Chicago, and I failed to mention the Foundation of East Chicago, which is funding this project. They made it all possible by giving us a grant, and they have given us a grant for the last 4 or 5 years, and that's where Alternative actually started from, a program that was funded by the Foundation of East Chicago, which is a foundation that is donating money to several initiatives throughout the community of East Chicago. So it makes it possible. And we were just able to recruit these young men that that got interested. We got one man interested. He got some other people interested. And it gives them, it goes back to the prophet saying is that if you give a man a fish, he eat a day. But if you teach him how to fish, he eat for a lifetime. So with this garden, this young man learning how to do that at a young age, it only can enhance their ability as they grow older.
Pastor Willie Johnson is with the Mission of Jesus Christ Church. They're located on Kennedy Avenue in East Chicago, and they're right there in the area where there is a huge garden growing. And when you have a chance to drive by on Kennedy Avenue in East Chicago, take a look at the Mission of Jesus Christ Church property where the garden's located. And Pastor Johnson, thank you very much for being with us to talk about it. And looking forward to finding a lot more crops come out of that garden, not only this year, but in the years ahead.
Thank you very much, and we are looking forward to doing bigger and better things in the city of East Chicago. Thank you, and have a good day.
One of the latest recipients of the Innovator Awards from the Society of Innovators in Northwest Indiana goes to Michigan City, in this case to a project in Michigan City that is entitled Art Space Lofts. And to talk about that project, one of the big key people behind it, Michigan City Controller Rich Murphy. Rich, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm happy to be here. Yes, Art Space has been a big deal for Michigan City. It's really been the symbol of what is a comeback story in Michigan City. For so long, people that have come here have talked about the potential, but Michigan City hadn't seemed to garner the momentum. And they have done so with a catalytic project, and there's reasons why this has given us the momentum that it has with Art Space. Art Space is in a building that is seven stories tall. It's the biggest building on Franklin Street. It was the location of our Montgomery Wards when Franklin Street thrived throughout the 40s and 50s, when downtown was the place to be. But for the last three decades, it sat vacant, and much of our downtown was vacant. That was something that happened to many Rust Belt towns. So Michigan City, like a lot of other cities, is trying to find its way back downtown. And we've done so with what we believe is an innovative project called Art Space. We're the first Art Space project in the state of Indiana. And Art Space is the largest non-for-profit developer in the nation of artist-led workspace.
I understand this is quite a distinctive building in its own right. Tell us about the building and how it has come back from being a vacant building now to what it is today.
The building was built in 1908. It was the marquee building. It was the biggest, tallest building on Franklin Street. Mm-hmm. It housed the Montgomery Wards department store. It had a life as a city hall. It was a hotel. It had office space. Doctors and dentists had their offices there. So it was a building that was used by the public. And throughout generations, people used this building, and it was iconic in Michigan City. So you can imagine the impact on this city when a building that so many generations have used is now sitting vacant for decades. And that really became the opportunity for Michigan City. The building was owned by a local developer who owned the entire block, and the city had a opportunity in to wrestle this building out of the hands of this developer and to look at an innovative use. This project happened during one of the biggest recessions in U.S. history.
Yeah.
So we had to be innovative about how to finance it. And so we worked with Art Space, and we created a financial layering system that could be feasible. And we applied for 3 years of tax credits. And on the third year, we got the good news that we were awarded $10 million of federal tax credits for this project. And that really planted the seed for the Art Space project to become a reality.
Now, you've given us an idea of what is in Art Space Lofts. Tell us about some of the specific artists that are interested or either is in the facility or have actually gone ahead and taken up space.
Yeah, it's so exciting. The concept of Art Space is that you have to be an artist pursuing your art form, and there's a peer group that that measures that standard, and there's an approval process. But it's so exciting because there's musicians, there's writers, there's sculptors and painters and poets, and it's so exciting to have all these creators and these makers in our downtown. It adds to the vibrancy and the creative energy, and really makes it a special place downtown. These people have lived there with their families, and they support the local businesses, and they've really become a catalyst to cause redevelopment to happen next door, across the street. In fact, when this art space project opened, literally next door, a sushi bar opened.
Wow.
And next door to that, a California-style Mexican restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the positive energy continues. But once that kind of Goliath was slayed, the seven-story building, it really sent a strong message to the marketplace that Michigan City is back, and that there's a special thing happening downtown. And we have a cool downtown. It's hip. It's authentic. We're not polished in Michigan City. We're not trying to be someone who we aren't. We're proud of our industrial legacy, and we're proud of our historic buildings. And at the same time, we're proud of our majestic lakefront and dunes and the natural beauty that we have here. So there's really a great thing happening. And this building, this art space, because it was used for so many decades by the previous generations, now these generations seeing this building back in action and walking down the street, where, again, there's thousands of people walking down Franklin Street like they remember in the 40s and 50s. You can imagine what a powerful symbol of the comeback story this building can be. At the same time, you have the new generation of younger people who are growing up, where they're seeing their downtown coming back, and they're seeing these old stories become new stories, and the artists are causing economic development to happen. And it's really an exciting thing to be part of in the city.
Now, since you are a member of the Michigan City Administration, of course, along with Mayor Ron Meir, you get to see the other projects going as well, too. What else in Michigan City can be coupled along with this particular project, ArtSpace Lost, that can help continue the economic development and growth in the downtown area in particular?
Yeah, we are concentrating on our downtown revival, because that's good economic policy in the United States right now. You are judged by your downtown. So if you can create a sense of something special happening in your downtown, that causes the big picture to happen, which is bringing in investment, building our tax base, creating jobs. So, I mean, that's what this is all about, is looking to the next generation, the big picture, how we can keep kids from leaving Michigan City, how we can have people come back home because there is something to come home to, because there is job growth, because we are addressing things like our emerging commuter market to Michigan City, which is one of the biggest projects that's happening right now, is the double track project in Michigan City,
right,
in Northwest Indiana. And for us, we just had the Governor Holcomb here to sign the bill in Michigan City's train station. It was an exciting day. But what it does for us is it's a game changer, because it basically takes a lasso around Chicago and pulls Chicago closer to us, so the job market is closer.
And that's got to be helpful, too. Of course, taking the tracks out of the middle of the street is certainly going to be a major improvement, but that should also, I would imagine, make it easier for people to move into the neighborhoods around the tracks. You'll still have access to the trains headed to Chicago and points in between, but it's going to be probably a lot easier for folks to be able, certainly, to get around that area once the tracks are relocated out of the middle of the streets there.
Yeah, what it does is it creates an area that is prime for development. Transit-oriented development will move into that area because they are walking distance from the train station, which will change the commuter trip from 1 hour and 38 minutes, which is the current train ride, to about an hour. So So once that double check project brings our commuter time down to an hour, it effectively makes us a comp as a community to places like Naperville, Illinois. So we can compete with those communities, but with more advantages because we have a lower cost of living, we have a lower cost of doing business, and we believe we have a higher quality of life because of the waterfront lifestyle that we can offer. So again, this is a big picture. It's about we're selling a lifestyle in Michigan City and in Northwest Indiana where, in a sense, you can have it all. You can have the small waterfront town in the cool, historic downtown, the majestic beaches. But this all happens in the backdrop of the world-class city of Chicago. And it happens in a way that is affordable, more affordable, and cost-effective. So this really becomes the new frontier for development moving east from Chicago. The winds of opportunity, we believe, are blowing east towards the dunes. And places like Michigan City and other towns in Northwest Indiana, we believe, are prime for an improvement for the next generation.
Rich Murphy is the city controller in Michigan City, and we've been talking with him in specifics about the Art Space Lofts, which is the symbol of a downtown business district comeback in Michigan City. You'll have to go downtown and check it out for yourself there along Franklin Street. And this project is one that picked up an Innovator Award from the Society of Innovators in Northwest Indiana. And Rich, thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today. Good luck and all the other projects coming along, aside, of course, from the work that that NICTI is doing on the South Shoreline on the double tracking within the city of Michigan City. And we hope to have a chance to chat with you more about some other big projects in Michigan City in the future. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Chris. Always appreciate the opportunity to talk about Michigan City, and I hope to see you on Franklin Street soon.
In many cases, medical devices have to be custom-made. That makes them expensive, and it can take a long time for them to be produced. 3D printers have the potential to help overcome some of the obstacles. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lindsay Wright reports the technology's had an impact on countless industries, but there are few areas where it shows more potential than medicine.
In many ways, Violet Hall is an average 9-year-old. Goofy, smart, artistic.
I have one.
Go ahead. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
You're so modest.
Modest. Very humble.
That's Violet sitting with her mom, Millette, and dad, Brandon. But there's something that makes Violet unique. She was born without her right hand or forearm. She's used prosthetics before, but she outgrows them quickly. They can also be clunky, bulky, and expensive. But the one she's using now is different. John Rasick made it in the Mad Lab at Indiana University using a 3D printer. Rasick is a senior lecturer of design at IU. Here's his explanation of how 3D printing works.
It's just a series of slices, and you can control that resolution. You can control how thick, how solid the pieces are. So if you were printing a cup, you would print a circle, and then the bed would drop by millimeters or less than a millimeter, and then you'd print another circle, and then it would just keep going and keep going and keep going until you had a physical object.
After attending an Indiana University Science Fest, Millette Hall posted on Facebook inquiring about 3D printing. She wondered whether someone could print a prosthetic hand custom fit for Violet. Rasick's daughters played on a sports team with Violet, so he saw the post and responded. It took about 6 months for Rasick to make two prototypes and the final arm. He printed the arm in a series of parts, then used what's essentially fishing line to hold it together.
And the way it works is when she bends her elbow, it moves the fingers. Now it's not perfect, but you can get the sense of how it works.
And Violet acknowledges that, too.
Still working out some kinks, maybe? Or mm-hmm.
It's yeah. Very noisy.
The big plus for the Hall family, though, it was also affordable. The prosthetic cost only $35 to print.
You know, part of the motivation behind this whole movement was prosthetics are very expensive, and they're very expensive for kids, and kids grow, obviously. So this allows you to as the kids grow, you can reprint the arm to fit them.
3D printers are a game changer across the medical field, not just with prosthetic arms.
So this is a side view of the knee. This is the femur. Here's the tibia.
That's Dr. Todd Midla, one of the few orthopedic surgeons in the state and the only one in Indianapolis offering 3D printed knee replacements. Midla says traditional knee replacements are based on a sized scale, and that's why 3D technology makes more sense to him.
And when that prosthesis is made, it's made to fit that patient only and nobody else.
Midla recommends 3D replacements for most of his patients. That's a pretty dramatic shift considering he's only been using the technology within the last 2 years. But he's noticed faster recovery times, more satisfied patients. Across the country, doctors are using 3D printers to make skin, synthetic organs, heart valves, and medical devices.
Oh, I didn't say I was the most used.
Working with Violet is one of Rasik's first forays into medically related printing. Looking to the future, he sees incredible potential for 3D technology.
I think the way to proceed is you get a lot of people at the table. You get doctors, you get nurses, you get medical administrators, people who run hospitals, you get designers, you get fabricators, all at the table discussing these problems. And with all that input, you're going to get good solutions that actually work.
Rasik is also taking his work with 3D printing international with several projects. He's working on a crutch design and working on another prosthetic arm for a little girl in Uganda. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lindsay Wright.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. We hope you'll join us here tomorrow.